Hello, Lifebookers from around the world. Thank you for tuning in to the Lifebook Podcast today for Emotional Month in 2020. I'm your host, Jordan River. I hope you're having an incredible time crafting your life vision. I've got a powerful episode for you today. One of my favorite guests that I've had on the show, actually a repeat guest, and I know a lot of you are probably already familiar with her. She's an author and a speaker and so much more. Marissa Peer is on the line with us. How are you doing today, Marissa?
I'm phenomenal. How are you?
I'm doing so well. I appreciate you taking the time to come back on the program. We loved your last appearance. For those of you who are not familiar with Marissa yet, marissapeer.com is where you need to go. MarissaPeer.com. And Marissa, how have you been? What's been going on? Tell us what's been happening in your world.
Well, I've now trained 4,000 people in RTT all over the world. We've got people teaching our method in some amazing places, like in schools and in mental health facilities. And it was great. RTT won a lot of awards last year. So we're having a great life teaching, writing, and living in LA in the sunshine, which is always amazing.
Ooh, and I love it.
And speaking to all these Lifebook people who I feel like I know so many of them.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Rapid transformation therapy. Is that correct, Marissa Peer? That's really your specialty.
Yes, I created a brand new method of therapy called RTT. It means rapid transformational therapy because it's rapid and it is transformational. And people always have this belief that therapy should be long and painful and you have to take time to get a relationship going with your therapist. And I've never really understood that, because if you went to the emergency room in pain, they wouldn't go, oh, we've got to get to know the doctor and talk about your pain. They just make you feel better. So I've always believed that therapy should be like a doctor. They should fix you as fast as they can.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I know emotional health plays a big, you know, role into that when you work with beliefs and emotions so closely tied. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, and also a lot of physical problems. People don't understand. They go, I've got a diseased organ, but often you haven't got a diseased organ. You've got diseased thinking. So for instance, if you feel when you're 7 and your mom's husband looks at you funny, or if you are a kid of 10 and your dad is really pushing you to be straight A in every subject, you'll think a thought, which is, I can't cope with this. I need to get out of it. And then the mind will come up with a real symptom, migraines, obesity, skin conditions. So a diseased thinking will make organs unwell, but you have to go back to the source of that and fix it that way.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Marissa. You're right on. When it comes to emotions, though, it is Emotional Month. And something, when I heard that I was going to be talking to you and going to be talking about self-worth and self-love, I was really thinking of kicking this around in my head. Most of the time when people talk about subjects like emotion and love, it's in the framework of relationships, you know?
Yeah.
How did that person make you feel? Did you express yourself to your spouse? Like, there's a lot of relational talk, but I feel we often overlook the other side of that, which is the emotional openness, the honesty to oneself, one's self-talk, you know, and being nurturing to one's own emotions. Does that make sense? Can you speak on that?
Yeah, so many of us, you know, we look for someone else to complete us. You know, it's like, I'm looking for my other half. Well, you're not a half. You can't be looking for your other half because you're already a whole. But then when we find someone, we have this belief, this person is going to make me feel better. They're going to make me feel attractive and worth it and valued. I've got to show them my very best side, be on my best behavior. And so we kind of hide who we are and we forget a great truth at the basis of all friendships is we choose people who share our vulnerabilities. So people who try to be perfect are often alone and very unhappy. And you know, trying to be your best self to make someone else like you, if you pull that off, you'll forever feel like a fraud. Well, this is not really me. I mean, I did that in my youth. I pretended to be this perfect, confident, outgoing girl, and it just wasn't me at all. And then when the person was with me loved me, I felt, he doesn't even know who I am because I'd acted it. And it's such a mistake. And the other mistake we make is to say, could you make me feel good? And even if they can, then when they leave, all kinds of reasons, they take that with them. So we give all our power to other people. And, you know, most people don't even know how they feel because we've been taught, and it's such a mistake, to Netflix our feelings, to eat our feelings. You have emotions, go on eBay and buy something, bid for something you don't even need, and then you'll feel like a winner. So we've got all these ways of pushing our feelings and emotions down: food, drink, drugs, shopping, gambling, screen time. Problem is that if you don't get in touch with your emotions and your feelings, they just regroup and come back stronger than ever. And one of the most important things in a relationship is to feel whatever you're feeling until it no longer requires to be felt. So it's important to be yourself. It's important not to be what you think your partner wants you to be. And women have often lost themselves in a relationship and become what they think the other person needs. But then you pay such a high price for that.
Yeah, that's so amazing how you put it, and, you know, hiding your true self. And the other thing is, what other category do we treat like this? Like, autonomy and independence and inner strength really is the end goal to all other categories of life. Like, for instance, you say you don't want to have to rely on someone else to make you feel good emotionally. You don't want to rely on someone else to have to pay your house bill. You don't want to have to rely on someone else to take care of your laundry. Like, these are all forms of autonomy that we strive for. But in the emotional category, we do very, very little work to go, okay, I'm going to care for myself emotionally. I'm going to, like you said, feel these things until they no longer need to be felt, which is kind of like it's a task list. Like, it's something that you have to pay attention to, sit down and do.
Yeah. And we spend so long trying to make someone else like us. I mean, I see so many teenagers trying to make some uninterested boy or uninterested girl like them. Like, darling, if you put the energy into liking yourself, your life would be revolutionized. Instead of making this person like you, you like you. Because with love, we have this strange belief: I need to earn it, I need to work for it, I need to run after it, I need to buy it, I need to buy stuff to make someone like me.
Wow.
Or to buy stuff for myself so I look better than I think I am. And, you know, love is just to be enjoyed. A relationship is certainly where you go to give and receive, but you're not supposed to run after love, chase after love, work for love, or earn love. No baby on the planet says, oh, I better really earn my parents' love here, or they might leave me. But we get this real thing about, I've got to be more than I already am to have love. And magazines have done a huge amount of making people think that. You know, you've got to have thin thighs and big hair. But what if you've got big thighs and thin hair? Does that mean you don't count? Of course it doesn't. But if you read a magazine, you'd think, yeah, I don't look like those people. And it's creating complete dissatisfaction with who we are because we're exposed to fake images of perfection, particularly if we go onto Instagram and Facebook where people have 100 pictures and pick the best one. And we think, oh, everyone's got a nicer life than me.
Right.
I'm not enough.
That's exactly right.
There's something wrong with me. I don't look like that. And it's a terrible thing that we're doing to the next generation, making them feel not enough just the way they are.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Is the media and social media, is that like really what you find yourself butting up against a lot of the time? Like, when you're working with people one-on-one, what are the traps that we fall into that lead us to believe that we're not enough? You know, you definitely mentioned social media and media. I'm sure that's a huge factor.
It's that thing, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not interesting enough, I'm not clever enough, I'm not smart enough. And, you know, if you go and hang out with tribes, I know your parents have done that and you too, and I've done that. They don't have that because they don't look at mirrors. They don't look in a magazine. They don't wake up and go, am I attractive? Am I thin enough? Am I tall enough? Have I got the right labels? Am I wearing something that other people... I mean, my little girl was about 11. She goes, Mommy, can you bring me back a handbag? It must be by Prada. She didn't even know what it was, but somewhere she'd heard that Prada was the thing that made you special. And you have to really work with these kids to say, look, labels will not make you feel good. You need your own label. But it's an interesting world we live in where we're taking away contact more and more. Like, we have 500 Facebook friends, but no one to hang out with. We have all these followers, but they're not really in our life.
Yeah.
We're losing the thing that our DNA really requires us to have to thrive, which is connection.
100%.
Such a shame that, you know, what makes you happy is not shopping. It's not even losing weight. It's interacting with people that you like you. That your happiest memories will always be with people that you care about, that care about you.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Cultivating those meaningful relationships, building your inner character, getting good at things, developing competence and skill. These are very not sexy things. And I think that's why they don't make it into our lexicon, you know, into our zeitgeist like they should.
Yeah, you know, the most important thing is to believe you're enough. And nobody else can really put that in you. I mean, there are plenty of movie stars out there, plenty of people like Kate Spade and George Michael and Michael Jackson. You had all the proof that they're enough, except from the one person that mattered themselves, and Whitney Houston. Jeez. And Amy Winehouse. They got everyone to love them except for them.
So true.
And what you have to do is stop trying to make the world believe you're enough and do it yourself. Because if you can say every day, I am enough, I'm enough, I'm significant, I matter, and I have something to offer the world. I don't even know what it is, but I'm going to find something I've got to offer the world. If we could all say that every day and have our children say, I matter, I'm significant, I'm lovable just the way I am, then we wouldn't give up our power to other people saying, can you make me feel all right? And then people have this belief, but if I think I'm enough, surely I lie on the couch eating potato chips all day. No, if I'm enough, then I should have a better relationship than this. We don't need to fight all the time. I don't need to be so jealous. I don't need to scroll through my partner's phone because I believe they would never find anyone better than me, and I trust them. I'm enough so I can do more, be more, achieve more. So knowing you're enough doesn't make you do less. It makes you recognize that you're worth more.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I think that everything really stems from self-love. I've done this riff on the podcast before, but you know, no amount of discipline or, you know, no amount of grit will bring you to work on yourself and build an extraordinary life. You have to love yourself and think you deserve it on some level.
Yeah.
What do you have to say to those who are struggling with that, who feel that they aren't enough?
You see, a lot of times, you know, I was at a seminar many years ago and this girl put up her hand and said to the speaker, I'm bulimic. And he went, oh, well, you just don't love yourself. And the answer is to love yourself. And then she sat down. But people don't understand, what does that mean? Yeah, I want to fall in love with myself, because after all, the longest relationship you'll have in your entire life is not that guy with a six-pack or that girl with a killer body. It's with you, because even if you meet someone at 28, the first 28 years you'll never have with that person, no matter how much you love your baby, the longest relationship is with you. So how to love yourself is a specific formula. And one of the fastest ways to love yourself is look in the mirror and go, hey, there you are. I love you. Don't say because you lost 4 pounds or you got to design a t-shirt on today. Say, I love you because you are lovable. Say it over and over again. Write I'm enough on your mirrors. Write stuff like I'm awesome, I'm lovable on your mirrors. Say it to yourself and then start to be kind to yourself. If you mess something up, don't go, I messed it up, I'm an idiot, I forgot to charge my phone, I'm a loser, just I forgot to charge my phone because I'm a flawed person having relationships with other flawed people and I'm human. You know, don't beat yourself up. Praise will make your soul grow and criticism will wither it. And critical people are really unhappy, and people who can do praise are very benevolent. And other people can praise you every day, but it won't really go in until you praise yourself. So praise yourself, be nice to yourself. And another way to love yourself is to become your very own best friend. Take a minute and think, if I had the best friend or the best boyfriend, or if I'd had really loving parents or an amazing teacher when I needed it, what would they have said? We can do that now because it's not rocket science. What would a deeply loving parent say? They go, how lucky am I that you're my kid? What a gift it is to be your parent. It is the best job I've ever had. I love you because you're you. If you had the best husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend in the entire world, what would they say? Well, we know they'd go, I love you just because you're you. I love ringing your machine just to hear your voice. I love everything about you. How lucky am I to find you? And so it's what I call the missing bit. We keep looking for someone to turn up and put those words in us. And yet, nothing will have more power than you doing it. Because after all, somebody can say that, but they may be manipulating. But when you say it, whatever you tell your mind, it believes it must be true. The mind doesn't stop to think, is this good or bad, right or wrong, true or false, healthy or not? It lets it in. So if you want to love yourself, think about the words you wanted to hear your entire life and start to say them to yourself, and they will sink in just like lotion sinks into dry skin, and they will nourish you and make you feel better. And then when you meet someone else that says, I love you, you won't think, yeah, but you don't really, you couldn't possibly, or wait till you find out what I'm really like. You'll go, of course, I love you, but I also love myself. It's a lifelong romance, the one you've always wanted. You can't expect someone to love you if you don't love you. You can't expect someone to believe in you if you don't believe in you.
That's exactly right. That's really powerful stuff. And, you know, I want to ask you, Marissa, why don't we cut ourselves any slack? Like, I feel like there's a lot of people out there, including myself, who will be quick to like apologize for other people and cut other people's slack. Oh, no, it's no problem. Like, there was a mess up. It's no problem. But like you said, if I do something myself, I'm so quick to beat myself up. What is the human tendency to not cut ourselves any slack?
I think, you know, years ago, there was that very Victorian philosophy of like, you know, if you tell somebody something nice, you make them big headed and you should diminish people. It's also a biblical, a lot of religious tomes do that. I mean, the Catholic Church says all children are born sinners with a black soul, which I think is just an awful thing to say about a cute little child. And so they start from this, let's diminish you, let's break you down. I mean, in certain cultures, they have a saying that says the nail that sticks out must be banged back into place. I mean, what a thing to say. And so we've had this belief that people are like cattle. You should bring them up in a herd. Nobody should stand out. Everyone should feel bad about themselves. No one should get big-headed. And then they might get better. But you and I know that when you criticize someone, you make them worse. And when you praise them, you make them better. I said to someone, oh, my God, you've got so fat. You just look terrible. What have you done? Oh, you're awful. They're going to go straight out and eat another cake. If I said, wow, you've lost some pounds. It really suits you. Look amazing. Well done. They're going to go, yeah, I'm going to lose more now.
Right.
Because praise nourishes your soul and criticism withers it. Despite knowing that, we come from a background of preachers in the church, teachers at school, and parents who are scared to say anything nice in case we got ahead of ourselves and drew attention ourselves. And I guess it's because people were had to conform then. You know, it's like in the army, you were not you, you were part of the team. But now we don't work in a company and start on the shop floor. We have startups, we work for ourselves. And that's another problem, because if you have got your own startup, your own company, and no one says at the end of the day, hey, good job, what you did today was amazing, I noticed that you did that really well. If no one builds your praise muscle, what are you going to do? You're going to go home and eat cake and think, oh, I don't even, was I good today? I don't know, because I'm a coach working for myself and I'm dependent on other people to tell me I was good or not. So you have to build that praise muscle by saying, I'm good, I'm great, I'm amazing. And then when I wrote my first book, I was really scared that it would bomb. And I had a choice. I could go, oh, it's going to be awful. No one's going to buy it. Or I could go, this book is amazing. Everyone's going to love it. And I said that. I didn't really believe it, but I said it enough and I got to finish it. And it actually was amazing and it was very well loved. But when you have a brilliant brain, you do have a choice. And here's the choice. Rationalize what's going wrong, why it will never work out and you'll never find love, or talk yourself out of it. I'm lovable just the way I am. Someone's going to fall in love with my soul. I'm warm, I'm kind, I'm funny, I'm witty. And look around at people who are far from perfect. James Corden, Chantal Marie Brown, I think she's the Gap model who's got a vitiligo. Amy Mullins, who's married to a very famous actor, and she has no lower legs. And
Yeah, we all love that. So I don't know where the disconnect is. We love the model, you know, the model with the skin condition, but we cut ourselves zero slack.
I mean, it's very new. Even 5 years ago, that was, I mean, I took my daughter to Disneyland 20 years ago. Everybody there was blonde and blue-eyed with lily white skin. Princess Jasmine was just about coming up.
But right.
It's very new to worship people who are imperfect. We're starting now to think, because beauty comes in all shapes and sizes. We have people like Dove and the Dove commercial that say, look, it's not about having a thigh gap or a bikini bridge. And, you know, I was just reading recently all the different comments from the people that were Victoria's Secret models saying how hard it was to have to live like that and not eat and worry all the time.
Yeah.
We like people who are real, but it's very exciting to see that. We have a model in England who's got Down syndrome called Madeline, and she's just beautiful.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That was really sweet.
Yeah, but it's taken quite a long time for us to stop worshipping what we thought were perfect people who make us feel imperfect and to realize, look, I'm flawed, you're flawed. The very best you can be is a flawed person having a flawed relationship with a flawed person. And you go, oh, it's okay then. I'm free of this horrible race to be perfect, because when you try to be perfect, you enter a race with no finishing line. As you get close, it moves. And it moves. And perfect people, the people who try to be perfect, are the unhappiest. They're also the loneliest, because we don't really like perfect. We like imperfect people.
Yeah, that's true.
People who are like us. So if you're perfect, you're always going to be alone.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Can you share with my audience some strategies we can take away, some principles that we can employ into our lives to kind of safeguard and insulate ourselves against developing this undeservingness, if that is a word?
Yeah, I mean, I love I'm Enough. You know, I founded the I'm Enough movement, and I find it transformational. So I would say, write I'm Enough everywhere. Put it on your fridge in magnets. Write it on your mirror in marker pen. Put it on your phone alerts. Put it on your screen wallpaper, even put it in your passwords in a very secure way with obviously squiggles and dots and letters. Because if you have to type it every day, that's how the mind learns, by repetition. If you have to write it, read it, see it, and speak it on a regular basis, it goes in, because your mind learns by repetition. And it doesn't really care what you say. It's so easy to go, I'm not good enough, I'm not tall enough, I'm not interesting enough. Just take that out and say, I am enough. Because the words that go after I am will go after you. The words that follow I am follow you. So if you go, I am stupid, or I'm lazy, or I'm always self-sabotaging, I'm always destructing, I'm always failing, just take that, but I am enough. I am significant. I am lovable. I am worthy. I am someone, and I am deserving of love. And if you remember, the words that follow I am will follow you, then you realize that you have to be responsible for how you talk to yourself. Responsibility means an ability to respond. Anyone who would wake up and go, oh, I'm going to mess everything up today. I'm going to get everything wrong. I always do. I'm just a loser. You know, a lot of my studies have shown that a lot of depression is down to harsh, hurtful, critical words that you say to yourself on a daily basis.
I believe it.
Since your mind doesn't care what you tell it, why not just say, I love my life. I'm happy. I'm lovable. I'm here for a reason. I've got something to offer the world. And even if it's not true, your mind will let it in. Because when you say, I'm just a big fat loser, I eat like a pig, I'm eating nonstop, that's not true. No one eats nonstop all weekend. So you might as well, you know, you make your beliefs.
Yes.
And then your beliefs turn right around and make you. And then even more bizarrely, whatever you believe, the energy of that belief comes through. So if you believe dogs are vicious and they attack you, the energy will make dogs very nervous in your company. If you believe, oh, I love dogs. Oh, my God, they're the cutest, most loyal thing. Come here, let me stroke you. They will pat up to you.
So true.
You make your beliefs make you, and the universe seems to make your beliefs real. Change your beliefs. It sounds so simple, because it is. You know, your words shape your reality. If you don't like your reality, change the wording. You know, I always say to all my clients, because it's true, your thoughts control your feelings control your actions, and your actions control your events. And rather than say, I got to change these events and change, you know, I'm on Tinder and I always get dumped. Instead of trying to change that, change the thinking. Go back to the law of control. It begins with how you think. And change that, because it's free, it's easy, and it absolutely works.
That's exactly right. I want to double back to, you know, when you talk about I'm enough and writing it everywhere and making it your passwords. What I'm imagining, Marissa, is like a big graph with a line down the middle and two spots for tallies. And on one side of the tally are things that build up your self-worth, and on the other are things that knock down your self-worth. Yeah. And unfortunately, when you go through modern society, they just start racking up on that second part where they knock down your self-worth. You see, you know, the shredded guy in the gym commercial makes you feel bad about your body. Boom, mark down a tally. You get a low balance alert on your phone. Boom, mark down a tally. You know, whatever it is, someone drives by in a Bentley and you're driving your beat up little Hyundai. Boom, mark down a tally. I think it's really our job to balance that graph, balance that scale by putting things on those left sides, because society's going to take care of that other side for us. We don't have to worry about those tallies. But if we let that other side go blank, it can really mess with your mind.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things to remind us of is, what do we look for in somebody? We look for warmth. You know, there are plenty of supermodels who are dumped. There are plenty of rock stars and people who've got a real talent who just feel all alone, like Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain. So think about the people that you love the very most, your friends. Who is it that you like? And actually, we like people who make us feel good about ourselves. You know, I had a very glamorous, beautiful mother, but my gran was, for me, the person. She had fat arms, like two sides of ham, and she used to wrap me up in those. And she was the most unglamorous person, but I just thought she was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen, because she was so warm. And kind of my mother, who was lovely, was always on a diet, always in the gym. And I just didn't get that warmth from her that I got from my grandmother, who really understood how to make me happy. She'd cook me lovely things. She'd make cakes. My mother would never make cakes because they made her fat. And I think it was a good lesson for me to see what made me happy was the warmth of somebody. Mm-hmm. And same for all of us. Somebody having a great six-pack or a great body or wearing great clothes, that doesn't make you happy. Real warmth makes you happy. Mm-hmm. And if you can be a warm, caring person, somebody will just fall in love with you and be with you forever, because you may, I mean, after all, you know, it's a strange thing, but if you look at Charles, Diana, and Camilla, Diana was beautiful, but very needy. Camilla is older than Charles and never really cares what she looks like, but they have an amazing love story because she makes him feel good about himself. She understands him. He understands her. And often we look at great loves and think, wow, isn't that interesting? That girl isn't stunning, or that guy isn't stunning, but they've got something else. Mm-hmm. And it's being a warm person, being kind, being funny. For me, I mean, many women say funny is an aphrodisiac. That's much more important. Somebody who can make you laugh. And, you know, I had a time in my life when I was really very ill, and I was very ill twice. And he got me through it because he made me laugh every day. I mean, I was so grateful I had a funny husband, because it wouldn't matter how much of a six-pack he had or what kind of god he might have looked like, it was his humor that got me through that entire situation, because I could always depend on him to make me laugh. And that's what you remember at the end of your life, not what somebody looked like. Were they funny? Were they kind? Were they interesting?
Yeah, the warm interactions and the laughter. You're right. That's really the magic of life.
It really is the magic of life. People that make you laugh and are funny. And there's James Corden again. Women find him so sexy. You know why? Because he's funny. Ricky Gervais, I mean, he's not an oil painting, but we forgive a lot of things when someone's funny.
Funny, I love people. Ricky Gervais. I'm sure he would so laugh if you... if he heard you say that.
He wouldn't mind, because he even when he did The Office, that's what he was doing. He was sending up himself.
Oh, he's the best. You're right. But yeah.
he's funny. And there's a lot to be said for men and women to be funny, engaging, interesting, warm, and just be yourself. And, you know, right back to children going to school, the kids that go to school liking themselves, they have armor plating. The ones that go to school not liking themselves, the ones who get bullied and picked on, because they're very needy.
Right.
Which brings me to the real thing that people like, confidence is so sexy. It's one of the sexiest things you can have. And neediness is very unsexy, but you can become confident. There are techniques. We have confidence downloads that we give away completely free. And of course, Lifebook is helping you work on every area.
Oh, yeah.
To be confident, making your life a masterpiece. And that confidence is really sexy.
Yeah, for sure. That confidence and competence is quite a important key to life. And you're right. Having a roadmap like a Lifebook, it definitely helps you when you're on the free way of life.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you this question, Marissa, because I think you'll have a good answer for me. And it may be what we've talked about the whole interview, or you may throw something different at me. Either way, I'm excited. If you could banish one misconception, one limiting belief, one negative thought point from the collective consciousness of humans when it comes to our emotional bodies, what would that be?
I think what's coming to head is this belief that happiness is a destination, that we go to happiness, that one day we arrive at happiness when I'm thin, when the kids are out of diapers, when I've got more money. Happiness is an inside job. You have to be happy right now. This minute, you have to decide to be responsible. I'm happy today. Yes, the dog's thrown up on the carpet. My kids just put jelly all over the telephone receiver. And I've got this bill, but I'm happy now. Because if you can choose to be happy now, because there is no destination called happiness, people waste of going, I'll be happy when? When my kids have gone to college, when I've paid, one day you wake up and think, oh my God, where's my life gone? They've gone to college, I've paid, and I'm now sitting in this house and I'm so lonely. I wish I could rewind and have it all again every minute. Mm. And when I was a parent, I saw that people going, I'd be so happy when they're out of diapers, when they can feed themselves, when. I was like, oh wow, I actually wish every stage took 3 times as long. Living in the moment, just sitting with you and going, this is like amazing. I've got this little squidgy thing, and in no time at all, they'll be grown up. You just have to be, in the moment is all you've got. So you have to forget about the past, feel excited about the present, but really live in the now. And we see people, they're rushing to a yoga class to relax, and they're rushing to a meditation to chill out. And then they're rushing to do something else to be happy. It's like, stop. Happiness is this minute. It's now. And if you can choose to say, I'm happy now. I mean, for me, what changed my life was waking up and going, I always sing that song, Good Morning World, It's a Brand New Day. And then I'll go through, I love my sheets. I love my first cup of coffee. I love waking up, looking through my phone. I love getting in the shower because I always have a shower gel that smells great. And it sounds so Pollyanna, but if you can do that, oh, I'm having a job. I love the fact that I've got a car because it's raining. I love the fact that I've got a job because it pays the bills. If you can do that, resonate that frequency of gratitude. When you have big things, is every day becomes like Christmas Day. And again, being grateful and being happy, it really is a choice. Because if I pick my clients, I want me to, and they go, oh, it's the weather, or I don't have enough money, or it's my husband, he's so messy, but I have clients who live on yachts in the Bahamas who are billionaires, and they're still unhappy. So it can't be the weather, and it can't be the money. It can't be your job. Otherwise, you wouldn't have billionaires or miserable, and there's plenty of them. It's your ability to live in the moment and to make happiness an inside job and to combine that with knowing that you're enough. And if you do those 3 things, it will entirely change your life. And if you happen to have children or nieces and nephews, it will change theirs too, because you'll be such a good example to them.
It was a wonderful answer, Marissa. I couldn't have asked for a more poignant answer. And I know exactly what you mean about living in the present. And would you say recognizing the miracle that is life and that is, you know, human existence on this planet. I think that when you talk about, you know, loving the mundane, the quote mundane things throughout your everyday life. I think that's recognizing that it is a GD miracle that we all live like we do. Most people listening to this podcast anyways, is that what it's about? Appreciating that, like you said, having that gratitude?
I think so. And I think if ever you've been anywhere like downtown Cuba, you know, downtown Mexico, downtown Jamaica, not to diminish those people, but when you've been to this with absolute abject poverty, I'll never complain in my life ever again. And
and
you learn to not complain because you realize another truth. Your problem is someone else's fantasy dream. For your kid keeps you up all night. They love that. Husband leaves his pants or his toothpaste in the sink. Your teenager is driving you crazy. Your commute to work is horrible. Your customers are annoying. There is someone who would switch places with you in a nanosecond because your problem is their fantasy dream come true. And another good thing is to think, hey, what would I have given 10 years ago for this problem? You know, I've got, you know, I've bought this home and there's something, I'm always having to get someone to fix something. That's the joy of being a homeowner. I've got to commute to work and deal with difficult clients. Well, 20 years ago, you would have loved to have even had that problem. So just struggling to think, like, what would I have given for this problem 20 years ago is a good way of thinking, wow, I've come a long way, baby. And that's so true.
Totally. Yeah. What a powerful thought that some of your biggest problems throughout your day, other people, it's their miracle. That's really a poignant thought, Marissa.
Well, their absolute fantasy just to have a baby, a husband that, you know, didn't put the lids on anything, a teenage annoying customer that was difficult, a boss that was demanding, a commuter. I mean, if you have a car and money to put gas in it, then you shouldn't even really complain about your commute because, again, that is someone's fantasy dream come true. You know, I always remember driving my daughter to school and you had to go over this bridge in London. The bridge was shut and it took so long to drive. And then I remember looking at this mother at a bus stop, and I stopped the car and gave her a lift. It was raining, and she told me she had to do 3 bus journeys to get her kid to school. I thought, wow. And here am I moaning about being in a lovely car with heating, and I've got music on, and I decided there and then I would never complain about the commute again. Because we said, well, I wish I had an hour to myself. Well, you have. Sit in your car and listen to some self-development stuff. Make sure you've got some snacks in the dashboard. I always take tea in my car. And just think, yeah, it's a commute, but hey, someone else would love to switch places with me.
Marissa, it's so nice to talk to you because obviously you're chock full of knowledge and you work with all these different people and you have, you know, all these different strategies and principles, but you're also just like really easy to talk to and funny. And I really appreciate you taking time, you know, out of your really busy schedule to talk to me. This was a real pleasure.
Thank you. It's a pleasure for me too. I love it. I mean, I'm so lucky because every day I get to say I love what I do and I do what I love. And when you love what you do, you feel like you never work a day in your life.
I agree. I'm right there with you, Marissa. Right. Absolutely. Where can my listeners find out more about you, especially if this is their first time hearing you? I'm sure they're like, where can I get one of Marissa's programs? Where can we send them?
If you go to marissapeer.com, we have programs for wealth wiring, love wiring, wealth blocks, health blocks, relationship blocks. They're all completely free. So if you go to marissapeer.com, you can take several free downloads. If you want to find out how to find an RTT therapist or indeed become one, because we train everyone, no background in therapy is required, go to rtt.com. And finally, if you want to find out about the I'm Enough movement and join it, go to imenough.com. I'm also on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and I have a very unusual name. It's another thing I'm internally grateful for.
Nice. So at Marissa Peer on Instagram?
Yeah.
Perfect. Give her a follow, everybody. Check out the website. Check out all the lovely programs, some programs through some Mind Valley Talks. Really great stuff to check out by Marissa. Thank you for all the work you do in the personal development field, Marissa. We appreciate it.
You're so welcome. Thank you very much and hope you have a fabulous day.
Everyone listening, thank you so much for tuning in. This is Marissa Peer and Jordan River signing off, wishing you an extraordinary day. We'll see you next time on the Lifebook Member Podcast.